Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right. This is really me. Gremlins, 888-914-9149. That's the number to call. 888-914-9149. We have space available. You can upgrade to the Patrick Madrid Show at any time. Let's see. 888-914-9149. It's a number to call. I use the thumbs up emoji all the time, and people I know use the thumbs up emoji all the time. It's just kind of like, yep, that's right. You can answer somebody quickly, as in, yes, got it, that's good, I agree, sounds good, let's do it. It's just like a one emoji way to say a lot of things. But interesting story here in the New York Post, and my personal view of this is that this is utterly ridiculous, but it's happening. There are people who are really up in arms about this, Gen Z people. And Cyrus, you're going to have to remind me which age bracket that is. I think Gen Z is...
I think that's Young Thomas.
Young Thomas, so say under 30, say 30 to 20, somewhere in there.
I think Gen Z? Right. Yeah, that sounds
okay. Good. I know Gen X is like, what, 40 and up or
yeah,
late 30s
cool
and
ones.
Up?
They're cool. You know, we're good.
Is that so?
Yeah, we're not sweating all this stuff.
I used to be one of the young ones.
We don't get offended by someone giving us a thumbs up.
No.
I don't get triggered.
Well, these Gen Zers are getting triggered. They're angry that people use the thumbs up emoji. They say it's rude and hostile. They say they feel attacked whenever they see it used in the workplace. This popped up on Reddit recently. A poster confessed to being, quote, not adult enough to be comfortable with the thumbs up emoji reaction. Come on. What is there to be uncomfortable about? It's a sign of agreement or commonality, solidarity. They're also complaining about the red heart. They don't like that either.
What?
I know.
That means thumbs up means cool. I hear you. We're good. A heart emoji means, yeah, I love it. It's great.
Yeah. It could be I love you, I love it, I love this.
What
it could
be
possibly,
how are they triggered by that?
Well, a 24-year-old Redditor wrote, for younger people, the thumbs up emoji used to be really passive aggressive. It's super rude if someone just sends you a thumbs up. So I also had a weird time adjusting because my workplace is the same.
You sent me text this morning, and I replied with a thumbs up.
Absolutely.
You,
and I did not feel
okay?
the least bit triggered.
You're okay?
Sure? I did not feel the least bit triggered.
Okay.
Yeah. But then again, I'm not a Gen Z guy. I'm a baby boomer.
Yeah, baby boomers are pretty cool, too.
I just made it into the tail end of the baby boom generation, because that I think the cutoff there is 1964, and I slid in in 1960 is when I came online. So I'm technically part of the baby boom. I like it. You know, my parents' parents were the greatest generation. And I'm not sure what they designate my parents' generation as, the sons and daughters of the greatest generation. So a little bit more here. I think you'll find this interesting. Older workers, that would be you and me, appeared flummoxed by this reaction.
Oh, yeah.
Noting that they use the thumbs up in work-related chats to signal I approve or I understand or I will obey.
See?
I don't. I send you a thumbs up emoji, Cyrus, it doesn't mean I will obey. It's not what I'm saying to you. Let's see. Barry Kennedy, 24, told the New York Post, I only use it sarcastically, though sometimes I'm not even sure if the irony comes across. Apparently, a lot of younger folk tend to use the thumbs up emoji in jest.
Oh, I do
he
that
says,
too.
Do you know? Oh, so now I need to know. If you send me a thumbs up emoji, if that's in jest or if that's for real. I'm assuming it's for real.
Thumbs up.
That's right. And yet there's more. Let's see. One anonymous office worker chalked it up to a generational communication culture difference. Everyone my age this person said, in the office doesn't do it, but the Gen X people always do it. Boy, they should see the baby boomers. That's all we do is thumbs up. It took me a bit to adjust and get out of my head and that it means they're mad at me. It doesn't mean they're mad at you. Others complain that it comes across as dismissive. One Reddit user noted that the thumbs up actually means I've read your message and have nothing to add, and I hope and pray all the bazillion people in this group chat have nothing to say on it too. Have you ever been caught in one of those endless chats where you've got a bunch of people on it and everybody has to continuously keep commenting on it and your phone is just constantly beeping?
I remove myself from those chats.
Yeah, I need to do that too. Kim Law, 25-year-old social worker from Massapequa, she says, we're people and we have words to use. If I took the time out to write a thoughtful message, then you shouldn't be responding with the bare minimum. Fix it and write something real back. You know, I'd like to find that comment online and just give it a thumbs up.
I wonder how many thumbs up it has.
My friend Michael Knowles from the Daily Wire, super guy, really, really impressed with him. And he had a thumbs up emoji. That was his comment when he retweeted this story from the New York Post. He had a thumbs up. So I responded to him with a thumbs up. And then I looked at all the many other responses, and most of them were thumbs up responses.
See, those are sarcastic thumbs up, which is exactly what this Gen Zer is offended by.
In this case, it really was. You're right about that. It really was sarcastic. But there's more.
No.
Lifestyle and etiquette expert Elaine Swan, who has done corporate training on this issue. Can you believe it? There are corporations who are spending money to train people on when and when not to use the thumbs up emoji. That seems kind of strange to me. She says to avoid emojis all around in professional work, if only to avoid misinterpretation. She says emojis can be interpreted as disrespectful. This can differ from generation to generation. As we've seen across the board, people want to know they've been heard, and emojis do not convey that for everybody. Then just text them an ear emoji. You've been heard. So you get an ear as the response to your thoughtful text, Cyrus, and I'll send you an ear back as in, yeah, I hear you.
This is so crazy.
And here is a list. They actually, it was very thoughtful of them to do this. They included a list of canceled emojis. These are the emojis that the Gen X people do not want you to use. So act accordingly. Number one, at the very top of the emojis they don't like is the thumbs up emoji, the red heart emoji, the okay hand, the check mark, another one that I won't mention, a loud crying face, clapping hands, a lipstick kiss mark, and a grimacing face. You've been warned.
This is another example of...
Be warned, Cyrus.
These kids are... It's not how something is intended. It's how it's received that matters. So that's...
You know what? Let me interrupt you if I may. I don't mean to interrupt you, but... You just kind of sort of enunciated an axiom in philosophy. And it goes something like this, that the gift can be received only according to the mode of the receiver. That's another way of saying what you just said. And it's absolutely true. A gift or even anything can only be received according to the mode of the receiver, not the mode of the giver. So let's use the analogy of cement. I've used this before. So you're going to pour a new patio. And they come in and they put all the cement down, the concrete, I guess it's called technically. And they get it all smoothed out. And you make sure your dog is locked up somewhere so he can't inadvertently walk on this. Because why? Because when the cement is still wet, you can impress impressions upon it. You can make a handprint or dog, you know, paw prints or whatever you want. But once that concrete has set up, it can no longer receive those impressions. So what once was capable of receiving that no longer is capable of receiving it. And this is a very good point, that information, messages, gifts, etc., can only really be received according to the abilities of the receiver. And if the receiver can't understand it or can't receive it in the way that you intended it, you got a problem. Isn't that interesting?
Thumbs up emoji.
Yeah. I'm going to put a. I'm not going to put a red heart on what you just said.
How about clapping?
That's good.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I like that. 888-914-9149. Let's go to JP in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Hello, JP.
Hello, Patrick Madrid.
Yes, hello. How old are you?
7.
Wow. Well, welcome to the program, JP. What would you like to talk about?
So I was going to ask you, when Jesus died, how did he save us?
When Jesus died, how did he save us? Well, in the Old Testament, you probably know the story of Adam and Eve, right? You know about Adam and Eve? Cyrus, you're going to have to help me out here with JP. Can you do that for me? There we go. So do you know the story of Adam and Eve?
Yeah.
Okay. So you know that they committed a sin by disobeying God. And what happened was they got thrown out of the Garden of Eden, and they were not allowed to live there anymore. And they lost a lot of the gifts that God had given them. And one of those gifts was that they would be able to be friends with God and see God face to face the way they did before. And so what happened was, not only did Adam and Eve lose that ability, they no longer could be in that relationship with God, but then their children couldn't, and their children's children couldn't. And all the way down to our time, all the people who have been born since then, we've been born by missing what Adam and Eve had in the garden, but they lost, and that was this special relationship with God, a special friendship with God. So what that meant was, and maybe you've heard your mom and dad talk about it this way, that the gates of heaven were closed, and that meant that nobody could go to heaven. And so the penalty, do you know what the word penalty is? Have you heard that word before, JP? Yeah. Do you know what that word means?
No.
Okay. Penalty is like if you did something. So let's say that you disobeyed your mom and she said, you have to clean up your room before dinner. And you didn't do it because you did something else instead and you disobeyed your mom. So maybe your mom would say, all right, well, because you didn't do what I told you to do, the penalty or the punishment is you don't get any dessert after dinner tonight. That's your punishment. That's what penalty means. So the penalty, the punishment for the sin that Adam and Eve committed had to be paid for by somebody. But Adam and Eve couldn't pay for it because they had lost their friendship with God. And all the rest of us, after Adam and Eve, we couldn't pay for it, because we didn't have that friendship with God either because of what Adam and Eve had done. So God himself became one of us, Jesus. And he, by dying on the cross, he offered his life as a sacrifice. He was innocent. He didn't do anything wrong. But he offered his life as a sacrifice to pay that penalty that all the rest of us really owed because of our sins. So that's how he saved us, by dying on the cross for us. Isn't that interesting?
Okay.
Yeah. So let me guess, JP, I'm going to guess that that name, that your nickname, JP, is John Paul. Is that what it stands for?
No.
All right. I'm going to guess again. Is it Joseph Patrick?
Yes.
Yay! I win! But everybody calls you JP, though, right?
Uh-huh.
That's great. Have you made your first Holy Communion yet, JP?
No.
Okay. But you've heard about that, right? You've heard your mom and dad tell you that someday, sometime soon, you're probably going to make your first Holy Communion?
Yeah.
That's good. All right. Well, did I answer your question? Does that sound like you got the information you wanted?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Well, very nice to talk to you.
Okay. Bye, Patrick Madrid.
Bye-bye, JP. Joseph Patrick. I'll be right back with more of the PM show, Patrick Madrid, right on the other side of this quick timeout. I'll be right back.
Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Let's go. That's right. 888-914-9149. I have room for you on the phone lines right now. That doesn't happen very often, so give me a call. 888-914-9149. So are we fully over the thumbs up emoji, Cyrus? Have we thoroughly exhausted that topic? I think we have.
Well, just to clarify, I mean, let me circle back.
Well, see, now you're getting back into it. I think you have seen the Daily Mail online on Twitter. I know that you follow them. And they have a tweet this morning. Speaking of passive-aggressive behavior in the workplace, here's some phrases you may read in your boss's email and what they really mean. You ready for this?
The secret's out.
Yeah. So this is the list of passive-aggressive corporate email jargon decoded, at least according to them. Per my last email, this information is in previous correspondence. Why did you not bother to read it before asking?
Oh, that's good. Here, why don't I?
That's a pretty.
Why don't you read what the boss reads, and then you can tell everybody what it really means.
Okay. Okay. Right. So you're the employee, and you get an email from the boss with these things, and I'll tell you what they really mean according to.
So when Patrick emails me and he says, and he ends it with "Hope this helps," what are you really saying?
According to them, it means never ask me for anything again.
All right.
I don't mean it that way.
I know. I'm playing. I'm just playing. All right. What if the email says, "Thank you for your feedback. I'll be sure to keep that in mind."
They say that means your criticism is incorrect and irrelevant, and I'll never consider it.
These are accurate.
I could see that working. Yeah.
All right. What if it says, "Just to clarify"?
Well, here's where I don't agree with their interpretation. They say "just to clarify" means, do you realize how stupid that sounds? And I don't get that from that at all. I think if you wanted to be snarky, "just to clarify" is like where you start speaking to a very small child, assuming that the very small child doesn't really understand a whole lot. So you kind of dumb things down. Yeah, what I could get out of it.
"Just to clarify" means I've already told you how to do this 3 or 4 times, and I'm going to tell you again.
That's right. What's next?
How about as previously discussed? That kind of falls into the same "just to clarify" category, I think.
It does, yeah. So as previously discussed, they say, "I didn't put it in writing last night because I assumed it was obvious and that you were an adult."
That's good. That's fine. All right.
You know what I interpret that to mean, though? I have something different. So if I were to put in an email "as previously discussed," it's reminding the person, we've already talked about this, so we've already reached some sort of agreement, or I already mentioned to you, or for me, it's kind of like reiterating something that we've already agreed on. That's the meaning it has for me. Usually when I use it, I'm trying to gently say that, as we discussed, etc.
All right. How about...
What's next?
While I understand your urgency...
And they say it means just because you didn't do something when you were supposed to doesn't make it my problem.
Fact.
And I think that's dead on.
All right. How about?
While I understand you're in a panic right now, right? I'm not.
Yeah. Maybe if you would have done it when you were supposed to. Mm-hmm. All right. How about I'll let you take it from here.
That means I'm not part of this conversation and I don't want to be.
Next time I'm in a group chat, I'll just put that in there.
So if the phrase is, I'll let you two take it from here. I interpret that to mean, this is no longer my problem. I am now stepping away from this and you guys handle it.
All right. How about,
what's next?
How about, I've attached another copy for your convenience.
Which they say means don't pretend like you didn't see the first one.
That's funny. All right. Yeah. All right. Just a couple more. Just a few things.
Now, they say, this is so terrible, where do I even begin? I don't get that from this. Just a few things to me is a benign phrase. Here are a few items for your consideration, or here are some things we need to do. So I think they're kind of overreacting to that one.
Yeah, I agree with that one. Okay, how about if someone says, friendly reminder?
I get those all the time. They say it means there is nothing friendly about this message. I interpret friendly reminder to mean, This is a friendly reminder. The next one won't be friendly. I have to remind you again, it will not be a friendly reminder.
I like friendly reminders. It's like, oh, thank you. Yeah, nothing wrong with giving me a reminder.
I need friendly reminders because it feels like I've got so many things going on. It's easy to forget something.
All right. What if?
All right. We're getting toward the end of the list.
What if my boss says, at your earliest convenience?
Do it now. That's what they say.
That is exactly what that means. Yeah. Yeah. And last one, let me know if you have any questions.
They say it means I really hope you don't have any questions.
And that's exactly what
I think
it means.
That's, yeah, and I think that's kind of one of those obligatory, you know, please let me know if I can be of any service or please let me know if I can help. And the assumption is I really don't plan on you getting back to me on this, but I'm just being polite. I think that's reasonable.
I think it is too. It's like when you're in a meeting and with a bunch of people and the guy's done talking, it's like, all right, any questions? And it's just quiet for a couple of seconds,
right.
And then they move on. So it's just a polite way, hey, just making sure we're all on the same page. All right, let's move on.
Is that on your list, or are you telling me that you prefer to move
well,
on?
Well, I end a lot of my emails with, let me know if you have any questions. So I wonder if I'm passive aggressive.
Well, let's take an office poll and find out what everybody here at Relevant Radio thinks. You might be surprised. 888-914-9149. Thank you, Cyrus. Let's go to Kathy now in Savage, Minnesota. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Not too bad for a
good. Sinner. Here too. My question is, I'm hearing a lot from parishes that are doing the Alpha program, which I know is not a Catholic program.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just wondering your opinion about it. To me, I don't know why we're introducing a non-Catholic program into our Catholic faith when there's so many wonderful programs out there.
Mm-hmm. I have a few thoughts on that. I'd be happy to share with you. And first, I'll say I became aware of the Alpha program, and it may well have been around the time that it first started to become known here in the United States. It was started by an Anglican priest, Nicky Gumbel, I think, or Gumbel or Gumbel, one of the two, in London. And it was designed to present what C.S. Lewis referred to as mere Christianity at the most basic level, the most rudimentary level, for people who really had never been catechized and didn't know anything about the gospel. So when it came to the United States, it was implemented in fits and starts at first. And I had the same reaction that you're expressing. First of all, I wasn't as bothered by the fact that it was non-Catholic, but I thought that there were some real deficiencies in the program. One, for example, I studied the materials. This is when I was working at Catholic Answers, so I'm trying to remember why I did this. It might have been to prepare an article or something. But anyway, so I went through the modules that someone had sent me, and I looked at it, and my takeaway was that there's some nice things about it, and there's some good and helpful things about it, but it kept talking about the church, and it never defined it. And obviously, it wouldn't define it as the Catholic Church because this was prepared by a Church of England guy. But it was that ambiguity about the church that fed into other ambiguities that I found in other parts of the Alpha program. So I had a largely negative opinion, not because I was bothered by like erroneous content as much as I thought it didn't give enough specificity to be of much good. And that was my impression for years and years and years. Well, one day I had the occasion to talk with a bishop of a diocese who told me that he had implemented Alpha in his diocese. Because I had gotten a phone call or two on this topic on the program, and I expressed my, you know, my feelings of kind of indifference or ambivalence about the program. And so he said, well, I heard your comments. I just want to let you know that in our diocese, we have made this thoroughly Catholic. And those things that you rightly say are ambiguous, we've corrected that and infused it with some really good, solid Catholic add-ons. He didn't use that terminology, but that's what he meant. So I was pleased to hear that, and it sounded as though it was working well in his diocese. Well, it just so happens that I had an occasion to see that bishop again not long ago, within the last month or so. And so we were chatting for a few minutes, and I think I brought this up again. And he says, oh, well, just so happens that we've moved on to a better program that's even more, you know, filled in with Catholic teaching. And although Alpha was good as far as it went, this new program is better. Now, the problem is, Kathy, I didn't ask him what the new program was because our conversation ended abruptly. We had to go into a meeting. So I didn't get a chance to ask him. So I'll need to do that, and then maybe I can report back on the air what that program is that this diocese is using. But here's one final thought, Kathy, and I'd like to hear what you think. But one more thought from me, and that is that I don't think it's any stretch of the imagination for people to see that aside from those like you who listen to Relevant Radio on a daily basis, most Catholics, and by the way, we're working really hard on getting most Catholics to listen to Relevant Radio on a daily basis. But in the meantime, there are so many Catholic folk out there who really just don't know the faith. They really don't know the gospel. They're Catholic. They've been baptized. They've gone to Holy Communion. They go to Mass maybe on Sunday too. But no one has ever really shared the gospel with them. So they don't really know a lot of the basic things. Like if you were to ask a Catholic, do you believe in one God in three persons, also known as the Trinity? Yes, I do. Well, why not one God in four persons? And you get a blank stare. Why not one God in two persons? Why does it have to be any set number of persons? Why not just one God in one person? Many Catholics, maybe most of them, they wouldn't have a clue how to respond to that, which makes them sitting ducks when door-to-door missionaries from other groups come along to their homes and ask them that kind of question. Or, you know, about Jesus. Who is Jesus? Is Jesus just a man who's got some great ideas? Is he God in a human suit, like he's wearing a costume? And a lot of people, they don't know that. What is the gospel itself? What did Jesus come to do? What is the program that Jesus wants us to follow when he says, follow me, pick up your cross, deny yourself, follow me? What does that mean exactly? How do you actually live out the gospel? So what I'm saying here are, these are kinds of basic questions that a vast number of Catholics nowadays, they don't know. So even though the Alpha program had its deficiencies, has its deficiencies, it could still serve a useful purpose at that very entry level for people who just don't know anything, and they don't know that they don't know. So if it's conducted in a way that's consistent with Catholic teaching, etc., then I think it can be a very helpful thing because it can reach people where they are, as the saying goes. So I wanted to add that little footnote to what I was saying earlier. Any follow-up thoughts on that from you, Kathy?
Well, I hear what you're saying, and that's what I'm hearing from some of our parishioners and other churches' parishioners. But it's just like, you know, I've done Bible studies and listening to you and Drew and Father, Go Ask Father, and everything for so many years that I'm just probably at a different place in my journey. But it just feels like we're watering down our Catholicism with not only Alpha, but a few other things since the pandemic. It's just kind of, I just feel like we've had such a watering down.
Well, I don't deny that. And that has been for a variety of reasons. Vatican II sort of set in motion a very, to put it lightly, a very unfortunate mindset in many parish settings, and that is that if you talk too much about doctrine and dogma, which is just the formally defined doctrine, if you do those things, then you're retrograde, you're a traditionalist, you're stuck in the past, you're not the future. This isn't the spirit of Vatican II, none of which is true, of course. But it led to almost a kind of anti-intellectualism in some quarters where people didn't want to really teach those details of the faith. They preferred the butterflies and the felt banners and the happy clappy and Jesus is my friend and not a whole lot more. So we now have several generations in the aftermath of Vatican II because of the way, at least in part because of the way that these things were implemented so poorly, that they just don't know the faith. We have a lot of high-functioning Catholics who just don't really know the faith. And we need to reach them, you know?
Yep, I agree. All right, thank you.
You got it. I hope you didn't feel trapped on this phone call, but I do appreciate you raising the question. Thank you, Kathy. 888-914-9149. And this, to go back to that topic I was mentioning a moment ago, this is a big reason why Relevant Radio exists, so we can try to help people rebuild their lost faith, maybe in cases where they didn't even know that they lost their faith. It just slipped through their fingers without even realizing it. I mean, when my parents were young, before they got married in 1958. And so when they were growing up in the 40s and 50s, the Catholic Church, with all of its problems, and there were problems, it's not as though it was, you know, the Andy Griffith Show and everything was perfect, but the Catholic Church in the United States was intact, and it wasn't experiencing constant upheaval and constant tinkering and constant, you know, differences. There really was no problem with quality control from one parish to another because they were all saying and doing the same thing. And you had the traditional Latin Mass, which was a tremendously unifying factor. Let's face it, there are so many parishes now where, even though in some ways it can be good to have the Mass in vernacular, isn't it true that a lot of our parishes, they're just divided up among different ethnic groups? So the Spanish-speaking parishioners never see the English Mass parishioners, and they never see the Vietnamese-speaking parishioners, and so on. So whether we agree with it or not, one fact is that the Church before Vatican II in the United States had a kind of intactness about it. And there was no upheaval going on. Hence, like osmosis, if you ever did that experiment when you were a kid in grammar school and you put the stick of celery into a cup of water that's got food coloring in it, you come back the following day, now the celery is the color of that food coloring because by osmosis, it absorbed it. And that's what happened by and large in Catholic parishes and Catholic schools and Catholic neighborhoods in the United States, because people could just kind of absorb the Catholic faith. And they did. And so my parents' generation and their parents' generation, they had the faith, and they had it more or less solidly. They knew it much better than, say, my generation did, because, as I say, I was born in 1960. So the old Mass was passing away, and by the time I'm, you know, 8, 9 years old, the new Mass is in full swing, and so much of this so-called Spirit of Vatican II craziness was in full swing. And in so many parishes around the country, the children were no longer actually taught the faith anymore. They were given pablum under the guise of CCD. And you may say, oh, yeah? Well, yeah, because I was there and I saw it. I lived it. And I know it's true because, having traveled the country for 35-plus years now and talking to countless people and answering their questions, it's the same story wherever you go. Beginning in the 60s and into the 70s, just there was this real slide in handing on the faith. So consequently, my parents, they didn't expect that that would happen. They didn't realize what was about to take place in the world with all the upheavals and shocks to the system and the revolutions and whatnot. And then Vatican II took place. And so they thought that my generation would learn the faith the way their generation learned the faith, by osmosis. And it didn't work that way. So now my generation, when we had our kids, we had less, and in many cases, a lot less available to us to give to our children. I thank God every day for the education I received from the nuns when I was in grammar school at Mission San Juan Capistrano. I thank God that they used the Baltimore Catechism, St. Joseph edition. I think that really helped to protect my faith. I thank God I had parents who taught me the faith in the home. I'm very grateful for that. But all of this to say, so then my generation, with less to give, hands-on what they had, and then the next generation, my children's generation, they're in even a worse situation given the rise of the internet and all the other encumbrances that are shouting for your attention and so on. So this is why, coming back to Relevant Radio, this is why Relevant Radio is so important, is because it doesn't matter where you are in the spectrum. And I don't mean on the spectrum. I mean in the spectrum. Where do you know a lot? Do you know a little? Do you know nothing? Are you kind of like, oh, yeah, I vaguely remember that? No matter where you are in this continuum of Catholic knowledge, there's something here at Relevant Radio for you to learn and to fill in those gaps and in many cases to restore that lost faith. So just remember that. Every so often we have a pledge drive. We're not in pledge drive right now, but every 3 months we do a pledge drive just to keep the lights turned on because that's what we need to do. So please don't forget that's what you're supporting. You're helping generations of people who just don't know. And when they do, boy, do things change. Vocations, stronger marriages, happier marriages. It just, the dividends that accrue are incalculable. I'm going to take a break. And we're going to come right back. 888-914-9149. That's the number to call to be on the air. I'll look forward to talking to you right after this.
This hour is sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare, the first to offer comprehensive sharing for prescription medications. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to CatholicHealthShare.com.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Oh, I love this. And I guess it's because I mentioned the Andy Griffith Show, right?
Thumbs up emoji.
That was a great show. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Matt in Fresno. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Patrick. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Patrick. Good morning. I needed some advice on a brother-in-law who's taking advantage of my mother-in-law.
Okay.
He's in his 40s, and like he's never had a job, and he's kind of just starts things with the family.
Okay.
So I just need some advice. It's been going on for, you know, a lot of years.
How is he taking advantage of her? Financially or how?
Financially, she pays for all his, for everything, his phone.
Okay. And how old
is he?
He's
like a big kid. He's 40.
Wow. Okay. And so does she do this because he asks her to do it, or is she just in the habit of giving him things?
I think it's like both. She's been doing it for years, and mm-hmm. it gets kind of violent, you know, so he doesn't have any really structured. So,
how do you mean violent? Does he hit her?
No, he'll push her sometimes, but I think he's stopped that, hopefully, or he'll cuss her out or, you know, stuff like that. Like, it's just like he doesn't have any, there's no line, no boundaries for him. So he always just...
That's called, Matt, that's called elder abuse. You can get put in jail for that.
Right.
So, I mean, keep that card in your back pocket, especially if he's already been physically violent with her. That's a huge red flag. And it sounds as though if he's that kind of an unstable, angry person, that could erupt into something much worse. So you have to protect her. I'm sure you want to. You wouldn't be calling me if you didn't. So have you confronted him and told him to knock it off and to leave her alone?
Well, when I confront, you know, I'm not allowed to go to the house. I have to sit in the car outside.
Why?
When we go and visit. Well, because
why?
I don't know. The reason is just because they don't want to hear. The mom pretty just much doesn't want to hear. Like, she knows the situation. And he starts problem with it. Started with the whole family, you know, that it's building up to the family because of him. And so when I mention something, I try to tell the family, the in-laws, and they'll say, well, don't tell mother-in-law because she might have a heart attack. And
all right.
So I try to do my part already. So I just don't want any problems, but at the same time, I don't want to sit outside. I don't know how to go about this situation, Patrick.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like there's danger there for your mother-in-law, and that's got to be somehow, that's got to be remedied. If you're the odd man out, is there someone else in your family who is sympathetic to your view who could carry the ball? And would be allowed in the house and would be allowed to kind of take the bull by the horns and start fixing the problem?
Yeah. Yes, there's a maybe like two people.
Well, why don't you enlist their help? Why don't you get together with them, go out for a cup of coffee or whatever, and just say, we've got a real problem here. She's in danger. She's already being hurt physically. And who knows if this would escalate to something more. This guy is out of control, and we've got to do something about it. What do you guys recommend? And get them in on it. Get that way they have a stake in what's going on. And if they're not willing, not them, but the other family members aren't willing to listen to you, maybe they'll listen to these people. Have you tried that?
Yeah, I've tried it, Patrick. I mean, like I said, this has been going on for years and years, and it just seems like really nobody wants to. Well, they try, but it just kind of comes down. They don't want the mom to, you know, to have a so-called heart attack, and I hope she doesn't, but
no, you
she has a lot
that.
On her plate.
Where's the father in all this?
He's there, but he won't be around too much longer, so he's already getting dementia and stuff like that, so
okay.
It's probably right. Not healthy to put that on him.
Now, your wife is one of the daughters, right?
That's correct.
Can't she intervene?
She does. She does. She does a lot of intervening, yes. And she has confronted my mother-in-law and told her the situation. The mother-in-law understands, but it just consists. It's like there's no stopping this guy.
Okay. Well, Matt, it sounds to me, from what you're telling me, that this is probably not a situation you can actually fix. If the people involved are unwilling to participate in fixing it, you can't fix it for them. Now, I would obviously recommend family counseling, get into some kind of therapy, not you per se, but her. Maybe she'll be willing to do that. Maybe she won't. I don't know. But if your hands are tied and you can't do anything about it, then maybe you put your brother-in-law on notice and just say, listen, if this keeps up, I'm calling the cops and I'm going to report you for what you're doing. And if you don't want me to do that, Then you back off and you start behaving. Now, that might make him more angry. But at some point, I wonder if the police need to get involved in this, if he's actually physically harming her, as you said. That's crime.
Yeah.
Anyway, those are my thoughts, Matt. It sounds like a very difficult situation, to say the least. And I will say a little prayer that this smooths out without anybody getting hurt. Let's hope. Thank you. Let's go to Gabriel now in San Antonio, Texas. Hello, Gabriel.
Hello.
Hi.
My question is, why in the Apostles' Creed do we say Jesus descended into hell?
Oh, that's a unique question. That's actually a really good question. The word hell there doesn't mean that Jesus went to the place where the devil is. It doesn't mean that he went to hell where the bad people will go. It means that he went to the underworld. That's what the word hell means in that context. So the underworld is where everybody goes when they die. And we can say this with regard to up to the time of Jesus. The words that were used were Sheol in Hebrew and Hades in Greek. And that meant that when people died, they went to this place. It was called the underworld. And the good people went to a place of peace, and the bad people went to a place of suffering. But they were all in this underworld. And if you want to see in the Bible where Jesus talks about this, look at Luke 16 and read the story about Lazarus and the rich man. And Jesus actually describes it. And in this underworld is a place where Abraham and all the good people of the Old Testament were waiting for their Savior to come and rescue them. And when Jesus, as the Creed says, descended into hell, and on the third day he rose again, it means that he went there in the underworld to them where the good people were waiting. And he preached the gospel to them, and then he brought them up to heaven. That's what that refers to.
Okay. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. Nice chatting with you. Let's go now to Greg in Minnesota. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi there.
I had a question for you about why would
there have to be a battle in heaven between the good angels and the bad angels, why couldn't God just banish the bad angels to hell?
Well, obviously God could do that, but God chooses to do things through his ministering servants. So just as in the case of the announcing of the incarnation of Jesus, God could have told the Blessed Virgin Mary directly, but he didn't even do that directly. He did that through the angel Gabriel. So I think the clearest biblical answer to your very good question is that God, rather than doing these things himself directly, it's not that he couldn't do it, but he chooses in his wisdom to cause these effects through his ministering servants. So the good angels, they turned on those fallen angels and drove them away. What that means exactly, we don't know, because they were not like in a place where they took up space. It's not like they got kicked out of a, and then the gate shut behind them or anything like that. We don't really understand the angelic realm, but it seems to me that for the same reason that God sent an angel to declare to the Blessed Virgin Mary about the impending birth of baby Jesus, he uses his angels to do things like that as well.
Okay. Could I ask you another question?
Sure. We don't have a lot of time, but sure, for the time that we've got.
I was curious if you could recommend a book. My mother was abused by her stepmother, and she is unable to forgive her. Mm-hmm. And I have heard that there is no salvation without forgiveness. So I was kind of curious if you could recommend something along those lines to fix that problem, I guess.
Well, one book, I'm sure there are other books out there, I just haven't read them, but one book I have read, and I find it very helpful, is called Making Sense Out of Suffering. And Peter Kreeft, K-R-E-E-F-T, he's the author, he has a section in there about forgiveness and how the sins that people commit against you that cause suffering can be compounded if you fail to forgive them. Because the forgiveness is the way to heal from things like that. It doesn't mean you have to like that person or spend time with that person, but to truly forgive from the heart. Jesus said, you know, unless you, in the story about the unforgiving servant, and I'm sure you know this, where the first man owes a huge amount of money to the master, but he pleads for mercy and the master cancels his debt and he goes free. And he sees somebody in the street who owes him a small amount of money, but he has no mercy on that man and demands that he repay him. And because he can't, he has him thrown in jail, debtor's prison. So when the servants see this, they drag this guy back in front of the master and they tell him what happened. And he says, "You wicked servant, should you not? I had mercy on you. Should you have not had mercy on your fellow man?" And then he has him thrown in prison, reinstates the debt. And then Jesus says to the apostles, he says, "And so will my heavenly Father do to each of you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart." And he doesn't mean putting somebody in a physical jail. So Peter Kreeft talks about that issue in this book. Again, it's called Making Sense Out of Suffering. And not forgiving somebody only amplifies your own suffering. So why not forgive them? I'll be right back. Thank you, Greg. Coming back with hour two right after this.